Hi everyone, welcome to a new week and a new episode of Rich Reflects. This week we're going to talk about leadership, a topic and area that's really close to my heart that I constantly strive to improve, get better and grow in. In this episode, I have the honor and privilege of chatting with the dynamic and inspiring Carla Harris about all things leadership, what it means to be a great leader today, what are some of the misconceptions that we have on great leadership, why is being authentic, decisive, and resourceful more valued in a leader today than being the expert? How can we then be more authentic and embrace our multifaceted selves in every room that we walk into so that we may connect more powerfully with everyone else? Carla also shares brilliant insights on the importance of recognizing the unique strengths in each and every team member and where they shine best in order to inspire leadership and also build a dream team we can trust. Not least of all, she also drops pearls of wisdom on the agile topic, imposter syndrome. I have personally benefited so much from Carla, her books and her content, and of course, this conversation as well. She's truly a gem for leaders and women of our generation. I'm so excited for you to find inspiration, aha moments, and the courage to win, fail, and win again through this episode. Let's dive right in. Carla, thank you again so much for giving us, you know, your time to share with us Carla's pearls of wisdom. I'm really excited to learn from you. Before we get into details, I want to ask you, Carla, what is your definition of a great leader today?
Yes, my definition of a great leader is someone who can motivate and inspire people to deliver beyond that which they even thought they could do. So you not only inspire them as a great leader to deliver what you've asked them for, but you inspire them to sort of think to themselves, what else can I do? How can I add greater value here? How can I contribute even more? Because they want to do it being a part of your team.
These are two big words, right? That, you know, most of us really can't wrap our heads around sometimes. And also, I think the interesting thing is each team member is so different. We're motivated and inspired by very different things. So what's one advice that you have for us to succeed in motivating and inspiring the team?
Yes, I am a big fan in making sure that you engage individually with all of your people. Most leaders will try to scale down the number of people that are reporting directly to them. So I would say that most leaders might have as large of a team as 15, but that's pretty big. Most CEOs try to get it down to 8 or 10 or 6 people reporting directly to them. Yeah. But the game is to connect with each one of them, because as you said, Rachel, everybody's different and everybody's motivated by something different. But if you engage one-on-one as a leader, you're going to find out what really lights Rachel's fire, what really turns Kimmy on, what really makes John feel great and want to go for it. You're going to learn that, especially if you're a good listener as a leader. And then as you go about your interactions with each of them, you know what words to use, you know what phrases or when to joke, when not to joke with all of them individually. And if you inspire them as individuals, now you actually are influencing them to go out and do the same thing for their people. So it will trickle down, and before you know it, the entire organization will feel as though they are engaged and they're motivated because of their leader, which all rolls back up to you.
Amazing. And it sounds like to be a great leader, you must be a great listener.
I do believe that, because I think people say a lot of things, but they mean other things. And if you're listening, you will know not only what they said, but you will know what they meant.
Wow, that's amazing. It's almost like being able to read between the lines what they're saying and what they're not saying as well, right?
Absolutely. And having the courage to go the second order derivative down. So when you know someone has said that, then you say, are you sure? Is that really what you mean? Or are you trying to tell me blah, blah, blah? And you now say the thing that you know they didn't want to say. And there it is out there in the open between the two of you. And so now one of you has to call a thing, as I like to say, as a leader. A great leader will call a thing. And once you get that out, then people are free to move past whatever that obstacle or that fear, that thing that scared them or challenged them. They're free to move past it now because you shed light on it. Once you put the light on the monster, you take away the power.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, today as well, I think being a leader, it's prestigious, but it's such a heavy responsibility. What
Yeah.
is one hard truth about being a leader?
Yeah, I will tell you that as a leader, you have to be willing to call a thing a thing. And what I mean by that is, you know, if there's a problem with the organization or a problem with the person, you got to be willing to call it out. You have to be willing to be decisive. And the reason why I am answering your question that way is that you know as well as I do that most organizations are non-confrontational.
Yes, especially in our Asian culture.
Yeah, if people can avoid the conflict, they will. But sometimes you have to confront the issue in order to be able to move past it. And especially is the case when you have someone who is not performing. And that is extremely difficult for, you know, for leaders to call that out for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes you really need the body, so you don't want to use the person. Sometimes you're afraid of the repercussions because of who that person is connected to, or you're afraid of the repercussions because people on your team really like that person. They're a culture carrier. But one of the things that I've been counseling leaders to do is to be very clear about your expectations up front. Because then when someone is not performing, it makes it easier for you to have that conversation. Now you say, Rachel, I told you the definition of success was A, B, and C. You've only given me A consistently. And I've called you out about that three times. So my only conclusion is that either you cannot or you're not interested in giving me A, B, and C. But that's what it takes to be successful on the team. So clearly, this seat is not your best and highest use. But let me help you get to the seat that's going to be the best one for you. I can do that, right? And then, but it's got to be off of my team. Now you can have a constructive conversation. You're calling a thing. You're not emotional that because you're saying you haven't delivered on all three.
Yeah.
So now let me help you try to get to the thing that you really want to do, because we both know it's not this.
How do you approach it though, Carla? Because it's sometimes when it happens, it's so hard because like you said, sometimes there's a lot of other layers of nuances. Like this person is so well loved in the organization, they're a culture carrier. It's easier if this person is, you know, someone really difficult. But what happens when this person is underperforming yet so well loved? And I remember in one of your stories that you shared, you had a lesson on the blind spot of giving too many chances.
That's
Could you
right.
tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So basically, when you are in a position of leadership, and this is what I found out to be my gap, because I really liked this person and I believed in this person probably more than they believed in themselves, that every time they would make a foot fault or mistake around this issue, I kept saying to myself, oh, they're under a lot of pressure, or oh, maybe they didn't know, or oh, maybe so I wasn't clear.
We give excuses.
Right? Right. I kept making excuses. So once I made sure that I was clear and the person did it anyway, once I made sure that there were no other things that were obvious, that was personal, that was going on, then my only conclusion was that this person was either incapable of doing that or they didn't care enough and want to correct, right? So then I was able to have the conversation and say, it's not going to work, right? So let's figure out what really does work for you. There's no shame in this game. This is not for everybody. I get it. Maybe I'm not for everybody. I get it. But what I do know is you in that capacity does not work for either one of us, right? So now let's figure out what that looks like. And I said it just like that, with a good attitude, with a constructive attitude, because as a leader, you have to be careful about your demeanor. And the two words that I talk to people about all the time, Rachel, is constructive and productive, right? Because if you can be constructive as a leader and saying, my job is to help you, it is either to help you in that seat or help you out of that seat into the right seat for you. That's what I do as a leader. Then people are looking at it in a whole different way. And there can't be any debate. And if you've given them a few chances, then even if they're begging for another chance, chances are you've already said, this is your last shot. And then they blew it again, right? So you have to hold steady on that and say, I don't have capacity to try it again. So your best bet is to conserve your energy and to put it in your new thing so you can hit that running. And so staying there with that demeanor and staying in a posture of trying to be constructive and helping them, I think will serve you well in that conversation.
Yeah. And what is your philosophy, Carla, around people? Because people are our most important resource, right?
That's
And
right.
like you shared earlier in examples like that, it sounds like it's like what you're telling us is also important to be timely whenever we face
Yes.
any kinds of people issues, right?
That's right. That's right. You can't let them linger because time is not your friend when it comes to people issues. The longer you let it go and it's not corrected, the harder it's going to be. So once you have gotten all of your data, then you have to be decisive. One of the things that I also say in Lead to Win, Rachel, is
Yeah.
that, you know, people are no longer expecting you to be the expert as the leader. Things are changing so fast.
Yeah.
Innovation has a cycle now of about 10 to 12 months at best. Used to be 10 years, then 5 years, then two. Now it's more like 10 to 12 months. And there's no way you can have a full command of any industry or any particular process. But what people are expecting you to do is not be the expert, but to be decisive. They
Wow.
want somebody who is going to take the information and be decisive. They want somebody who is also resourceful. If you can't help them being able to make two phone calls or being able to command resources to help your people execute, that's what they're looking to you for as a leader, not to be the resident expert. Because if you're constantly trying to disrupt yourself, which is what most organizations who want to maintain their leadership is trying to do, then there's no way you can be the expert on everything. And the game is to get other people in your organization who have the expertise, or they know a little bit more than you do in that space, or all they do is innovate. The key is to be able to attract those people to your team and fully leverage them
Yeah.
and make sure that they can be at their best.
I love that, you know, Carla, because I have also heard from President Obama previously when he was in Singapore, and I know you worked with him. So I would love to talk more about that later. But this reminds me a lot of what he shared. One of the key things that he shared was also the point on the importance of being decisive and what
Yes.
helps him, because a lot of the times we as leaders have so much at stake. There's no way we can make a 100% sure decision. But what he said was exactly like you said. I think it's about surrounding himself with people smarter than him in different areas to ensure that they provide him with the different point of view and, you know, perspectives. And then when he has all of that in place, he just has to make the best decision with the knowledge that he has there and then. Is that
That's
also
right.
how you approach, you know, your daily running of the organization as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you can only make a decision based on the information that you have. And that's why it's also important, Rachel, that you surround yourself with people that you trust and that you will believe that will tell you the true story. You don't want to surround yourself as a leader with a bunch of yes people, because then you will never be able to truly see around corners and anticipate what could happen, and making sure that you not only have the plan that you're going to execute, but you have a fallback to the fallback to the fallback, right? The plan B, the C, and the D. But if you don't fully trust the people who are around you, then it's a little bit garbage in, garbage out, right? Because if you're getting garbage in as the input, then your decisions, garbage out, are not going to be as solid as they can either.
And I'm going to talk about the next important topic related to this, which is building the right team or building the best team around us. As leaders, right? Carla, how do you think about building the best team around you?
Yes, I talk about that in chapter 3 of Lead to Win. Your team is really your legacy at the end of the day. And every leader should be thinking about, how do I invest in two or three people that could take my seat? Right? I'm not going to always want to stay in this seat, or I may not be capable of staying in this seat. And all of us should be thinking about the next version of ourselves. You know, I'm on Carla 3.0. My chairman and CEO, I went to him and said something about Carla 2.0. And he said, with all due respect, I call it 3.0. And I said, well, do tell. He said, in my opinion, 1.0 is your academic preparation. 2.0 is the manifestation of your career and your family life, and hopefully you're excelling at those. And 3.0 is all about you. So each of us should be thinking about the next version. So therefore, as a leader in the seat that you're in, you should be able to say, I'm going to invest in Rachel. I'm going to invest in Steve. I'm going to invest in Nancy. So when it's time for me or the board to make a decision on my successor, they have a choice because you have equally invested and trained them. That is the essence of great leadership, that you develop other leaders behind you to really lead. And when you're thinking about building your team, if you have an early stage company like you did 18 years ago, the temptation for people is to go after yourself. You say, I'm somebody who gets it. I'm smart. I have a strong hustle gene. I can get 3 or 4 or 5 jobs done at the same time. I need another me. That's the temptation. But you don't need another you for your team. You need to be thoughtful and say, since I've been doing this on my own, what do I think I'm the best at? I might be good at everything. I might be good at operations, making sure that the operations of the organization is really running. I might be really great at sales. Nobody can sell my company the way that I can sell my company. I may be good at managing people. Everybody loves to work with me in a different way than they work with other people. You may be good at all of that, but I'm going to challenge you as a leader to say, yeah, but what am I the best in of these three? Once you've decided that, that's your best and highest use for your organization to drive its success. Now you should be hiring the other pieces that you need. So if you decide, I'm a great operations person, I know how to run this thing and get maximum capacity, then you need to go get a Miss Outside or a Mr. Outside that can really sell your company even better than you think you can. And then you need to go get somebody else who is just a strategist when it comes to marketing and distribution and getting the message out through all kinds of platforms. So you need to hire where you have the gaps when you're building your team. And then you need to hire people that you think you can infect in a good way, so that they are of the mind that as they build their teams, they infect down that way, as we talked about earlier.
I resonate so much with that, Carla, because I think even for me in my journey as well, firstly, I think it takes so much self-awareness to get to the point, you know, to recognize that this is where I can be the best at, and this is where, you know, I am absolutely not at all. And this is where I need to hire people smarter than me in these areas to do this with me. And I think that for me has also been one of the most transformational decisions that I've made, you know, being a co-founder in the business as well.
That's
I wanted
right.
to also switch gears to talk about interviews, Carla.
Yes.
What do you look for during interviews, especially in a world today where I think that candidates are getting so much better at presenting themselves? They know what to say. They are able to answer everything according to what you want them to answer. So what do you look out for?
Well, I got to tell you, it's not that hard. People told me a long time ago that as an interviewer, you'll know in the first 3 minutes. And I remember when I heard that, I was clutching my pearls. I'm like, what? 3 minutes? You got 30 minutes. How can you tell in 3 minutes? But I got to tell you, Rachel, after interviewing thousands of people, you can tell in the first 3 minutes. And what I'm looking for is who that person is. I already have a sense of whether or not you can do the job by your resume. And it was your resume that suggested to me that you could do the job, which is why you're sitting in front of me for the interview.
Yeah.
Now, I may ask you a couple of questions just to make sure that that's legit, that you really know what you're talking about in terms of the subject matter. But I'm going to spend most of my time now trying to figure out what you're made of. Do you work well under pressure? Are you going to be honest? Will you give it to me straight, no chaser? Because that's how I'm going to give it to you. Do you work well with other people in the sandbox? So I ask a lot of questions, really getting at the person. And you'll be surprised, no matter how well prepared they are, when you start asking questions about somebody's person, or that face starts coming off really fast if they have a face and a mask on.
That's such a good tip. Do you have some go-to questions you will always keep in your pockets to ask?
Sure. And I write about them in chapter 3 of Lead to Win, because I recognize not everybody has experience in interviewing. So if you don't, and if you can't get somebody to help you, I give you 15 questions that'll help you get at the person. So I might say something like, you know, I'm having lunch with the person that's your biggest fan while you were in college. They think you can do no wrong. That person's going to be sitting on my right, but on my left is going to be somebody who hasn't liked you since the beginning of freshman year. They still don't like you. And I'm going to say to both of them, I spent some time with Rachel. What if each of you have to tell me about them? Two things that your fan would tell me and two things that your foe would tell me. So it's interesting to see how they answer that question. Or I'll say, give me the one thing that you're trying to improve. The one thing that you say, you keep saying to yourself, Rachel, you know you got to get better at that. What is that thing? Or I'll say, give me the two things you can bank on. If nothing else is going right about you, what's the thing that you know you can depend on about yourself? And it's interesting to see how they'll answer that. And sometimes the phrasing is the thing that makes people pause, right? Because if you say, give me your two strengths, they've already rehearsed that. Give me your biggest weakness. Yeah. They've already rehearsed that. But now when you say, give me the thing you're trying to improve, now they're like, oh, wait a minute.
I love that. It's just also rephrasing it actually at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Carla, are some methods for developing and refining effective communication skills as a leader, particularly when it comes to delivering feedback and also managing conflicts? I think these are two of the biggest things as leaders that we need to be able to practice and do well.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm a big fan, Rachel, of practicing what you need to say in front of the mirror. Because sometimes we are rolling around in our heads what we want to say. And then when, you know, the words actually hit the air, you think to yourself, that didn't sound right. So if you think you have a tough message to deliver, practice it in the mirror so you can hear yourself saying it and you feel comfortable with the words that you're using, the cadence, you know, where you put an emphasis. And I think that can be very helpful. Thinking about what you want to say before you say it and even practicing it, I think is one of the most valuable things that you can do as a leader so you can be deliberate in what you are communicating and not just say something off the cuff, not having thought it through, not think to yourself how this might be taken or absorbed or not absorbed by the person I'm speaking to, making sure that you're saying it in the right context. You know, you got to be strategic as a leader when you're delivering messages to your people.
Yeah. And for yourself, especially when it comes to delivering feedback, especially a hard feedback, is there anything that you'll always go back to as a foundation or as a core value?
Yes. And I tell them, I'm going to give it to you straight, no chaser. Right. Mm-hmm. And I start with the things that are really great. You know, here are the things that are really great that you're doing well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, here are the things that are sorely in need of improvement if you want to get to the next level. And I try to give examples with those things because the worst thing that can happen is if you give somebody critical negative feedback and it's general.
Yeah.
And there's no backup to it. And they're walking away thinking or feeling like you made something up, but there's no basis for that. So as a leader, you need to come armed with the evidence around whatever that criticism is. Mm. And even if the person says, but, you know, that's not how I meant it, then you have to be prepared to say, but that's how it landed. And while you may not have meant it that way, the listener took it that way. And here was the reaction. So even though you may not think that that was offensive, I want you to think the next time before you say something, whether or not it could be taken as offensive, right? Because that's going to matter in terms of how people receive you. And if they're receiving you negatively because of the things that you're doing, then it's going to be hard for you to advance.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. You know, Carla, I wanted to ask also in today's world where, you know, it's rapidly evolving, especially in the business landscape, what are some key characteristics that you think a leader needs in order to succeed?
Yes, I think being able to be authentic is critical in this environment. And the reason why that was like the number one pearl of intentional leadership that I talk about in chapter six is that if you were building your career in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, there was frankly a prescription for how you got to the top. Mm-hmm. And if you followed the prescription, you got to the top. And it never required you to bring your authentic self into that seat. However, millennials and Zers are now the dominant population in the workforce. And they demand transparency, inclusivity, and feedback as table stakes. So they highly value someone who is authentic with them. And if they even remotely smell that you're not being authentic, then they don't feel like they can be authentic. And then therefore it will impact their work product. So being authentic is one of the most important things that you can do. The second one is building trust, right? Because as a leader, you're going into unknown territories because of what I said earlier about innovation, dominant competitive parameter, and it also has a cycle now of 10 to 12 months. Well, in order to prosecute these endeavors, your team has to trust you. They're going to follow you into unknown territory. So building that trust is also going to be critical. Diversity, making sure that you are thoughtful about having diverse teams. There's lots of data that says diverse teams produce better outcomes. Yet, when we are in a fast-paced, dynamic, highly competitive environment, we all reach for the familiar. So knowing that, you have to really push against that natural tendency when you're busy and you're stressed and there's a lot at stake. You have to push past that natural tendency and make sure that you have diverse voices at your decision-making table. Those are just a few.
Yeah, to your first point about being authentic, what if someone comes to you and say, Carla, how can I be authentic? Where do I begin? How do I know if I'm being authentic?
Yes. The first thing you do is spend some time and answer the question, who am I? Who am I today relative to who I was in 2014 or 18 or at the beginning of the pandemic? And I've been encouraging everyone that I speak to take some time to figure out who you are today. Because if you haven't done it since the COVID-19 crisis started, you must, because all of us have been impacted. There's not a person on the planet that hasn't been impacted some way by this COVID-19 crisis. So now define, who am I today? Am I still a morning person? Do I still value working on teams, or do I prefer to work by myself now? Who are you? Second key of bringing all of you into any room is now you understand that we're all multifaceted. There's an inquisitive you, there's an argumentative you, there's a highly intellectual you. We're all multifaceted. Embrace that. And then the third key to bringing all of you into any environment is now you can relax. Now you can relax and meet people wherever they are. You are now free to feel the energy in the room and decide, is it Carla the intellectual? Is it Carla the singer? Is it Carla the mother? Is it Carla the jokester? Which Carla is going to be the one that will engage most productively with the people on the other side of that conversation? And when you can walk in the room, not, trying to be somebody that you're not, not trying to show that you're this or you're that, now you're free to feel that energy and decide which part of you will connect authentically and most powerfully.
And you also talked about us being multifaceted, right? I think one of the things, especially for a lot of us, is we wear many different hats. We have different roles. And many of us face the pressure of juggling career growth, personal life, family responsibilities. What are some strategies or insights that have helped you or that you can offer us, to navigate this balancing act?
Yes, so I talk about that in chapter 9 of my first book, Expect to Win. It's
Yes.
all about balance in that chapter. And I define balance as those things that bring you joy, Rachel. You know what brings you joy. Sometimes it is your family, sometimes it's your significant other, sometimes it's your work, sometimes it's a new challenge. But making sure that you have some of those things that bring you joy in every day, that will make the more mundane or difficult tasks much easier to drive through because you know you have something else that's going to bring you joy. So I am maniacal about my calendar. That's one of the ways that I keep so much balance. That's one of the ways I get so much done. So I normally will make a to-do list the night before. That's one of my tricks. So when I come in the next morning, I say, okay, Carla, what does success look like today? And that gives me one more chance to reprioritize or add something that's on that list. And then I go after it. And so then I play games with myself throughout the day. So let's say I have a conference call for 30 minutes. Now I'm thinking, I'm driving this call. Let me see if I can drive this to 20 minutes. Then I have 10 minutes that I can now go and answer emails. Oh, okay. I said that I needed to call and check on swimming for my daughter or check on the goodies for her in-class party. Oh, I got 5 minutes. This call ended. Let me see if I can get this other call done in 5 minutes. So I manage actively and aggressively my calendar, my to-do list all day. And that's how I make sure that I can get things done. And then my last thing is that if you have people in your life, or you have the financial capacity to get people to help you, do that. You do not have to execute it in order to influence it. And it does take a team of people to do anything. Not only are you the CEO of your business, but you're the CEO of your personal life. You're the CEO of Rachel, the philanthropist. You're the CEO of Rachel, the person that's taking care of this temple. You're driving all of that as the head. Every successful CEO has a team. Every successful CEO has a strategist. So if you need a strategist in each part of your life for that, Do that.
I
And
love that.
sometimes it doesn't have to be somebody that you pay. It can just be an accountability partner.
Yeah. It really takes a village, like you said, to build a strong home and a strong team or a strong organization.
Or a strong individual.
Absolutely right. That's something we tend to forget and neglect. In your latest book, Lead to Win, you talk a lot about intentional leadership. As leaders, what are some key things that we need to be intentional about?
Yes, I call them eight pearls: authenticity, building trust, creating clarity, creating other leaders, diversity, inclusivity, innovation, and voice. And voice is about being willing to call a thing a thing. And my argument in chapter 6 of Lead to Win is that you don't just show up every day as a leader. You're not a leader because you've been there for 30 years or somebody gave you a title. You're a leader because you show up intentionally every day to deliver on these eight pearls.
Wow.
I'm bringing the real me. I need to make sure that my team trusts me as we go into this new strategy that we haven't seen before. I need to make sure I've been clear on that which I'm asking them to do. I need to make sure that I'm investing in those two or three people that I think have the capacity to lead. What am I doing for them or with them today? Let me make sure that I have either added diversity to my team or I'm celebrating the diversity on my team. Let me make sure that my team is thinking innovatively as possible. How do I introduce that into this team meeting or to those two people that I'm going to talk to today? Okay, how do I make sure people know that I value their contribution? Maybe today I'm calling on them, I'm soliciting their voices, or I'm simply giving an attaboy and attagirl all over the place today. And how do I make sure that I speak on a thing, call a thing, that may be troubling people or that I now know as a leader and have to somehow communicate to my people.
And I wanted to ask you also, you know, what are some common misconceptions, Carla, that you see today, especially amongst young leaders? And how can we correct the misconceptions in order to accelerate in our careers?
Yes, I think that young leaders still feel like they have to be the expert at everything, that it's somehow showing some inordinate vulnerability to say, I don't know, or I'm not sure. And that's why I made the point earlier, nobody knows everything in today's environment where we're constantly all trying to figure out the next thing or disrupt. So you don't have to present yourself as the expert, but what you have to do is to make sure that you create an environment where people feel like collaboration is the key, that nobody does it alone, and that they have to be bringing somebody with them to the table when they're executing or when they're bringing a new idea to everybody. And you're the one more than anybody on your team that can create that environment where people feel like it's a place that they can trust, a trusted environment where they can innovate.
Yeah.
But only you can do that with the leader label.
Yeah. And what is your approach to the teams taking risks or even the organization or yourself taking risks? Are there some things that, is there a guideline or guiding principle that you tend to follow?
Yes, I think you have to say it and then you have to back it up, Rachel. You have to say, listen, the only way that we're going to be able to move this ball ahead is that we take some risks. Now, I am telling you, I am not going to shoot the messenger if you take a risk and it doesn't work out. Because the only way that we're going to move ahead is that we have to think outside the box. So I want to see you come up with the craziest, wildest idea. I mean, obviously something that has merit, obviously something that might be able to work, but I want to hear it or I want to go for it. And then you follow through. You go for it with that idea. When it doesn't work, you then have the team sit down and you say, okay, what did we go wrong? How did we think about it? You know, let's see what we learned from this. Then you say, nice job, Rachel. Because if you hadn't pushed us to go forward with this, we wouldn't know this now. Doesn't matter that it didn't work, because the key here, Rachel, is that you fail fast. If you see that it's not working, okay, then you pull the plug sooner rather than later and go on to the next idea. But you acknowledge it. You acknowledge the try. You applaud the try. You make sure everybody knows that they learned something from it, and then you move on. But doing that repeatedly will have your team trust that you value their try.
In the last moments of this session that I have with you, I want to ask you also about your mindset and how you overcome imposter syndrome. You have had an amazing journey and there are so many odds stacked against you, especially in a time when you started. Have you ever experienced imposter syndrome and how did you overcome it if you did?
Every time I get that question, Rachel, I cringe because when I was coming out of Harvard Business School in 1987, that was the hot topic, imposter syndrome. So when I hear young, especially young female professionals talk about that today, I cringe because I'm thinking, why are we still talking about that? And my conclusion is that we, my generation, didn't do a good enough job telling your generation that once you have gotten to that seat where you are even remotely feeling uncomfortable, now you got to know that you know that you know that you can get it done because you wouldn't have gotten to that seat. That's number one. Number two, nobody chooses you for an opportunity because they believe you can't do it and they're trying to set you up. If somebody has used their currency on your behalf to get to that seat, then they already see something in your ability to execute. And if you don't have confidence in yourself, hold on to their confidence until you get there, right? But there's no reason why you should feel like you can't do it. Your truth is that you have a successful track record of firsts. You've done a number of things for the first time successfully. Even if it took you several tries, you finally got it. And here's the other truth that I know. If you did it before, you'll be able to do it again because you can learn, right? That's how you got there to even have the at bat. So whenever those imposter-like syndromes start creeping in your head, stop and think about your truth. I've done things for the first time before and I've done them successfully. I have the ability to learn. I know that I can win. I can overcome and have victory in this challenge one way or the other. And oh, by the way, if I fail, I won't be the first person that failed. I won't be the last person that failed. And one thing I do know is that failure always brings me the gift of experience. Now I know how to do it. Now I can do it better. And now I'll be able to do it successfully the next time. So there's no reason to feel uncomfortable or like an imposter, like you're going to get found out. For what? You got the at bat, swing.
And if you could have one message that you could share with all leaders, be it
Yes.
aspiring leaders, young leaders, seasoned leaders, what would that message be?
Own your power and distribute it on behalf of other people. The way to grow your power is to give it away.
Wow. If I could ask you, what is the first step that we can take to own our power?
Is recognize that you have power and to recognize what you have power over. I don't say that lightly, Rachel, because you'd be surprised how many people don't realize the influence that they have or they don't use the power that they have because they don't even recognize that they have it.
I love that. And my last question is, Carla, where can we follow you, your content, your works?
Yes, thank you. I have a YouTube channel at Carla Ann Harris. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Facebook.
Thank you so much. I have been personally so impacted by your content, your videos. Thank you for all that you do. You really inspire us. You walk the talk, you lead by example.
Well, thank you. You've made my day, honey. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, and I wish you
All right.
a great day ahead.
All right, you too, Rachel. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope that you've enjoyed my conversation with Carla as much as I did. If you have, please consider hitting subscribe. And of course, as always, I'd love to hear from you. What are some of your key takeaways from this episode? And also, would love to hear any feedback, suggestions, and ideas that you may have for me and the podcast as well. I look forward to learning, growing, and reflecting with you through this podcast so that we may continue to grow to become happier, healthier, and better versions of ourselves. I'll see you next week. Bye.